Hello and welcome to SG Voice Talks 2, brought to you by Sustainable Growth Voice, part of DC Thompson. In our fortnightly episodes, we interview individuals who are contributing to the sustainable economy or disrupting the status quo. I am Giulia Bottaro, news editor at SG Voice, and this week I am joined by Thomas Cresswell, Chief Business Officer at Melt and Marble. Hi, Thomas. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Hi, Giulia. Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here today.
So I think we could just start by talking about what the startup does and what your role is and what problem you're solving. I know it's a lot of questions in one go. Let's start by saying what Melt and Marble is about.
Sure. So Melt and Marble is a company aiming to help transition our food system to become more sustainable. And as we all might know, that our current agriculture system, particularly our animal agriculture system, is contributing to around about 15% of global greenhouse gas emissions. And that statistic, by recent studies, could actually be even higher than that. So we're aiming to help transition to a more sustainable food system by producing sustainable ingredients that can transition away from the high-intensity animal agriculture.
How did the startup come to be? What was the founder's initial idea?
Yeah, that's a great question. So just for context, maybe my story for how I got into Melt and Marble could be quite an interesting story. I think that's the birth of where it all comes together.
Amazing. Yeah, sure. Tell us all.
So, yeah, very high level. By way of background, I started my career really on the commercial side in strategy consulting and investment banking. And I then was very passionate about the food industry and wanted to move into that sector. And then I managed to join Cargill, one of the world's largest agri-food companies, initially in their corporate strategy team. And it was there where I was leading global market entry and growth strategy projects. But during that time, I really noticed that Cargill was not taking a strategic approach towards staying ahead of the disruption that is happening with all of these emerging innovations that were coming in our food system. And then I was lucky enough to pitch that we should really build out a venture capital arm to start investing in some of these early stage technologies. And it was during that time where I met Melt and Marble, who at that time had been developing this incredible technology platform around precision fermentation to develop the next generation of fat and oil. And then from there, it just so happened that they were really looking for someone from more of a commercial background to join their team. And I've been with them as their chief business officer for just over 1 year now. But interesting background about Melt and Marble, because actually they were founded as a company more than 7 years ago, initially to house a lot of the IP that was coming out of one of the world's leading research groups in metabolic engineering and synthetic biology at Chalmers University. And at that time, it was being led by Jens Nielsen, who is a globally recognized figure in this space. And him, together with the two other co-founders of the company, Anastasia and Florian, they were housing a lot of the IP from the work that they were developing. And they really developed the world-leading know-how for how to use different microorganisms to produce different fats and lipids. And that's really the foundation of the company. But it was maybe just over 2.5 years ago where they saw an opportunity to develop different types of fat or oil for use in the alternative meat and dairy space, which was booming at the time. But everyone was aware that there was a big missing ingredient in these products, which was better fats.
Amazing. That sounds like a real journey for the company. So are these fats and oils made with precision fermentation?
Yes, exactly. So yeah, we are using precision fermentation, where for the viewers who are not aware of what precision fermentation is, the easy way to think about it is that it's almost like brewing beer. And you can picture big fermentation tanks that might be typically or traditionally brewing beer, where in that process, you might have a yeast which is eating sugar, and it will convert that sugar into alcohol in the brewing process. What we're able to do is really rewire the metabolism of yeast to produce almost any type of fat. And we're leveraging our know-how on the engineering of these yeasts to really produce almost any type of fat. But our first products will be focused on animal-like fats, which can be used in alternative meats or dairy applications to really help take those products to the next level in terms of taste and flavor.
So it's something that we talk about a lot at SG Voice. And exactly what you said, taste and flavor is very important to convince people who are still consuming meat to switch to alternative proteins. Is that correct?
Absolutely. So if you look at most consumer research, the main driving factors for why consumers choose to buy a particular product, it's either taste or price. And in our view, you really need to be able to offer these consumers a product, which means they don't have to sacrifice anything in terms of taste. But you also need to offer them that at a price point that's either equal to or lower than traditional meat.
So what do we need to be able to reach that price?
So the price point is a very important one. And I think that it's important to also put that into context, because right now, generally, the price of different products, or in our case, ingredients, will evolve as companies reach scale on the production side and you start to reach a mass market scale, which means that you then benefit from economies of scale in terms of buying the feedstocks, the inputs to your process. You have the economies of scale by being able to produce much larger volumes. So, of course, as a relatively nascent industry, we're still going along that curve of really scaling up, which will give us the maximum economies of scale. However, in the context, which is important to understand, right now we're also in a system that we're competing against traditional animal agricultural products, which are also extremely heavily subsidized. So if you were really to factor in the true cost of what these meat and dairy products cost, not only the external environmental costs that come with them, we would then see ourselves already being at a price point where we could compete with that industry. So alongside everything, we need to scale the industry to benefit from these economies of scale. But at the same time, we also need to design policies and frameworks that can also level the playing field in many regards.
Do you see a desire to change the policies in the jurisdictions that you work, that you want to expand in?
Absolutely. And I think right now we're seeing this shift happen almost at a global level. There are pockets of countries, Italy, for example, where you're seeing them go against the grain in this respect. But most major economies are really seeing the need to encourage a more sustainable food system. And objectively speaking, most governments also see that animal agriculture cannot be sustained in its current form. So what you're seeing now at a global level are policies, even in the US, China, and particularly in even smaller, more leading countries like Singapore and Israel, where they're really implementing policies to help support the growth of these industries. And even you would have seen in the US with the latest bills coming out to support the bioeconomy, we're going to see a lot more support and investment coming into these spaces to really help scale these technologies.
So looking again at Melt and Marble and how you're doing, what are the next steps as a company?
So we are in scale-up mode right now. So that means for us, we are trying to scale the production of our first product lines. And as mentioned earlier, our first products are going to be targeted to be animal-like fats. So our first product specifically is or has been designed to be a beef-like fat. But we know that that will have an application in various meat alternatives. But what's interesting is we also have a lot of interest from personal care companies to use our beef-like fat in their applications also. But that being said, we're scaling up that production and we're targeting our launch in the US market in 2024. So these are big milestones on the horizon for us as a company. But alongside that, we're also going to be fundraising for our Series A funding round, which will help us get to that launch and commercialization.
So do you already have some preliminary agreements with clients that might be interested in buying the product when it comes out?
So this is, of course, quite confidential and top secret. But what I can say is that we, of course, are working with customers right now. We're at a stage where we're trialing our fat in their real life applications. So they're doing testing in their products as we speak. And Alongside that, we also have recently built out our own internal food science group, which are also doing internal testing and developing our own meat and dairy alternatives so that we also have the in-house comparison and we can test them ourselves. So I would expect in the coming weeks and months that you might see some more big announcements about potential collaborations with different customers. But this is something, of course, we're actively working on.
And in terms of food safety and product safety, would you need to apply for approval to the authorities, or does your product fall into the realm of existing available products?
So this is a great question, and it's a very nuanced answer because the answer to that looks different depending on which jurisdiction you're in. But in short, generally speaking, we do fall under what would generally be considered a novel foods regulation because we're developing a new ingredient that has not been consumed for many, many years. However, because what we're producing is almost bioidentical to a real animal fat, in some jurisdictions, the regulatory framework is very friendly because from a safety perspective, there are no known negative things associated with the fatty acid composition, the different triglycerides, what our fat is made of, doesn't have many safety concerns. But what's also interesting is that we're also using different microorganisms that have been widely used in the food industry for many, many years, which also makes it much more friendly from a regulatory perspective. However, with all of that being said, the regulatory system and the policies around that are one of the main drivers for why we're actually targeting our initial launch in the US. And that's because in the US, in general, the frameworks and policies around novel foods are much more streamlined. And that's in comparison directly to Europe, which is almost a shame being a European-based company. And we see that with many companies in our space having to go to launch in the US, because right now the novel foods framework in the EU is, in my view, quite outdated, but also extremely bureaucratic, which means that the time to market for most companies in Europe can be over 3 years. Whereas in the US, by the time you do all of your relevant safety testing and prove that your product and your process is safe, that can be almost less than 6 months.
Okay, I understand. It's a very complex industry, but I'm sure we're all looking forward to seeing develop. So thank you very much, Thomas, for your time today. It's been a great chat.